In this third and final episode in our review of bipolar depression, Tam Kelly shares his experience with high-dose thyroid. Welcome to the Carlisle Psychiatry Podcast, keeping psychiatry honest since 2003.
I'm Chris Aiken, the editor-in-chief of the Carlisle Psychiatry Report.
And I'm Kelly Newsom, a psychiatric NP and a dedicated reader of every issue. This month, we've taken you on a tour of 22 therapies for bipolar depression. And today, we cover number 22, high-dose thyroid.
Thyroid augmentation is one of those treatments that clinicians often read about but rarely use. And part of the reason is that the nitty-gritty details of dosing and managing this treatment are a bit more complex than they are for, say, venlafaxine. So in this month's Carlisle Report, we interviewed Dr. Tam Kelly. Tam has treated over 2,000 people with high-dose thyroid, most of whom had bipolar disorder, and he wrote a book about it, The Art and Science of Thyroid Supplementation in the Treatment of Bipolar Depression. But first, a preview of the CME quiz.
Which statement about high-dose thyroid and bipolar disorder is true? A. Thyroid hormone treats bipolar depression, but only when added to an antidepressant. B. Thyroid hormone treats depression, but can cause mania. C. Thyroid hormone treats bipolar depression, but causes anxiety and irritability. D. Thyroid hormone treats depression and rapid cycling.
Thyroid hormone is better known as an augmentation strategy for antidepressants in unipolar depression. Meta-analyses rank it among the top therapies for treatment-resistant unipolar depression, along with lithium and antipsychotic augmentation. But that's not what this episode is about. This is about treatment-resistant bipolar depression. And first, a warning. The evidence supporting its use is not as strong as it is for unipolar depression. There are two or three controlled trials, depending on how you count them. But that pretty much puts it on par with the small crop of options that we've covered so far for treatment-resistant bipolar depression, which we walked you through in our last episode.
To recap, those were, in order of their clinical usefulness, 1. Pramipexole, our top-line pick. 2. The modafinils, Provigil and Nuvigil, easy to use but not quite strong enough. 3. Ketamine and ECT, powerful but difficult to get. 4. Pioglitazone and celecoxib, novel meds with a mix of positive and negative studies. So where does thyroid fit on that list?
I would place it near the top, but I'd emphasize that it is only for significant bipolar depression that is treatment resistant. But treatment resistance is defined as failure to recover after 2 medication trials.
Dr. Kelly told us about 3 randomized controlled trials in treatment-resistant cases, 2 in bipolar depression and 1 in rapid cycling bipolar disorder.
There is a double-blind placebo-controlled study showing that it works. There's another double-blind placebo-controlled study that failed because the males had such a high placebo response. But females, it worked. But overall, it's considered a failed study because of the high placebo response. There are numerous case series that T3 and T4 that it's helpful for bipolar in high doses, including mine with T3 of, I think, 129 or 139 patients on it for over 5 years. So yes, it does continue to work, though sometimes the dose needs to be increased.
Some might think of thyroid as an upper, but I've argued on this podcast against thinking of medications as uppers and downers. It's more complicated than that. And thyroid augmentation did not cause mania in these reports. And in one of them, it treated mixed manic symptoms during depression.
No one knows how thyroid augmentation works, but Dr. Kelly shared his best guess.
The theory behind why high-dose thyroid works goes something like this. I mean, obviously, if it works, it must be doing something. But what are the things we know? We know that bipolars have dysfunctional mitochondria, and it's been well established that people with bipolar have low ATP levels inside their cells, and it takes ATP to get thyroid hormone across the cell membrane. Now, that's a very complex process of getting the thyroid across the cell membrane, and it's not completely understood, but it's established that it does take ATP. So those three things are established. And I've taken it a step further that why high-dose thyroid works and why it's needed is that I think that creates a cellular hypothyroid state. The only place in the body that it doesn't take energy to get thyroid hormone across the cell membrane, pituitary. So the pituitary thinks there's plenty of thyroid around while the rest of the cells are low. That's a hypothesis, but it seems to, it fits with the, you know, the higher doses just pushes enough inside the cells to make it up.
It's almost analogous to insulin resistance in diabetes, where there is plenty of insulin in the body, but the cells can't make use of it. Dr. Kelly is hypothesizing that the brain cells in bipolar disorders is unable to absorb thyroid, so we need super physiologic doses to get what they are missing. But he also pointed out that it normalizes depressinogenic changes on brain imaging.
One of the important things to realize about is some of the support that thyroid works. There's two neuroimaging studies now that shows that high doses of thyroid actually decrease some of the areas in the brain that are hyperactive that are associated with depression, such as the dorsal lateral prefrontal cortex. That's the executive function area of the brain. It helps that. It normalizes it.
That's interesting because normalizing the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex would, in theory, help mania as well as depression. But Dr. Kelly says the evidence stops there.
I don't think there's any studies on it. There are studies that it helps with rapid cycling. I certainly see it help with rapid cycling in bipolar twos and subthreshold bipolars.
So it's all a bit more complicated than energizing uppers for depression and sedating downers for mania. And there is a lot of overlap in the biology of those two mood episodes. Another stereotype is that thyroid augmentation causes anxiety because anxiety is a symptom of thyrotoxicosis. But in one of those studies that Dr. Kelly mentioned, they did a secondary analysis looking at anxiety outcomes, and they found that anxiety went down with high-dose thyroid in bipolar disorder.
I do remember that study. It was not a good study, okay. But I do agree that it can reduce bipolar anxiety.
Anxiety can be a side effect if you go too high in the dose. I mean, you can induce thyrotoxicosis with this treatment. But Kelly's hypothesis is that high doses of thyroid are normalizing cellular function in the brain. And he told us about an unusual study that may not prove the point, but is at least consistent with it.
One of the more interesting papers out there in Germany, they gave 400 or 500 milligrams of T4 to refractory depression and refractory bipolar depressed patients. And they all got better. But they also gave that to normal people to see what kind of effects that kind of dose would have on normal people. My question has always been, how normal can you be to volunteer for something like that? But a third of the normals dropped out because they couldn't hack the side effects. Thyrotoxic symptoms, anxiety, sweating. I talked to the author. He said the people who volunteered for it were people in the lab, himself included. He said they're all crawling the walls with anxiety and sweating.
For the patients, high-dose thyroid relieved their depression without any side effects. But for the normal subjects, the lab workers themselves, the treatment made them miserably anxious.
And that story gives you a hint of how Dr. Kelly doses thyroid medication in his practice. For more of that, check out our online issue where he delves into all you need to know to get started with this therapy, the dosing, side effects, risks, and a pretty convincing answer about whether to use T3 or T4.
Tamas Kelly is a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at the Jacobs School of Medicine and a clinical associate professor of psychiatry at the George Washington University School of Medicine, and the author of The Art and Science of Thyroid Supplementation for the Treatment of Bipolar Depression.
And now for the word of the day, Tovault.
Fifteen years ago, exactly to the day, on April 25th, 2007, the FDA approved Tovault, an orally disintegrating version of Zolpidem Ambien. It was taken off the market, not because of any problems, but because of poor sales. But you'll occasionally see patients who used it and miss the slightly faster onset of action that orally disintegrating products have.
That orally disintegrating Tovault might also avoid the food interactions with Ambien. Giving Zolpidem Ambien with food can delay the release by up to 2 hours. And that can be dangerous for patients, say, if they were to get out of bed before it kicks in. It's worse with a high-fat, large meal. Food also delays the release of other Z-hypnotics like Zaleplon, Sonata, and Esopiclone, Lunesta, but the effect is strongest with Zolpidem Ambien.
But Zolpidem is available as a sublingual form, which probably has similar effects. But this is a confusing product because a sublingual goes by two names, Edlua and Intermezzo. Basically, Edlua is the full-dose Ambien sublingual meant to be taken before bed. Intermezzo, as in interrupted in the middle of the night, is a low-dose version that the FDA allows patients to take when they wake up in the middle of the night. We learned about Tovault from the new edition of the Medication Fact Book, one of the most popular books in the Carlyle series, which was just updated in its sixth edition by Talia Pouzantian and Danny Carlyle. The book is critical info on every psych med, including new releases like Caplyta and Lybalvi, as well as treatment algorithms, natural therapies, and my favorite part, a section on managing side effects where each side effect gets its own page.
My favorite part is the fun facts. Danny believes that medical education needs to be fun, otherwise it can quickly turn boring. So he puts fun facts about the history or cultural impact of the medication at the bottom of each page, as a kind of dopamine booster when you've made it through the technical parts. But I have to admit, I cheated. When I got the book, I just read all the fun facts first.
Here's a fun fact for propranolol, which is used for performance anxiety. The list of notable people who suffer or have suffered from performance anxiety or stage fright is long. It includes Barbara Streisand, Carly Simon, Van Morrison, Frédéric Chopin, Renee Fleming, Jay Moi, Hugh Grant, Laurence Olivier, Mahatma Gandhi, and Thomas Jefferson, among others.
You're making me nervous.
Follow the links in the show notes to earn CME for this podcast and read the full articles at thecarlattereport.com, where podcast listeners can get $30 off the first year's subscription with the promo code PODCAST.